All right, this is Tosh Comer. I am doing my subject matter expert with Mr. TJ Jenkins. He is the owner and president of Rajan Company, and he will be interviewing today, and so we're just going to jump right in. Hi, Mr. TJ. How are you?
How are you?
Good. Okay. I do understand that you've been doing this for quite some time. I actually saw on Facebook, actually, that you've been doing it for since 2004. Yep. Has it always been you as the owner, or has it been a partnership, or how did you kind of come into Rajan?
It started off in a partnership for the first year.
Okay.
The first year, it was more so a partnership, and then I became a sole owner.
All right. Mm-hmm. All right. Was that a big step for you? Were you like, ooh, I don't know? Or that was kind of what was going to happen either way?
Yeah, yeah. It had already happened in the beginning. It just officially on paper, it was just me as the owner. Yeah.
Okay, nice.
And that's hence where we got the name from.
All right. So I thought so. It's a combination.
Yeah, it's a combination of Wright and Jenkins.
Okay, yeah. That's what I thought. I was like, I feel like that would, yeah. And it's different. It definitely stands out. Yeah, I like it. Yeah. Okay, so just a little bit about your career. What are some of the jobs you held in your youth?
Man, in my youth, I started off, I didn't have many, but I was very productive. Okay. My first job ever was working at Pizza Hut, answering the phones and prepping food and folding boxes.
Okay.
Of course, that was in high school, and then I went to retail at Belk's department stores as a sales associate in the shoe department. Then the men's department, and believe it or not, even the lingerie department. And then for a small stint as well, my entrepreneurship kicked in. I actually sold Mary Kay for about 6 months.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, what drew you to Mary Kay?
The money.
Okay. I mean, was it somebody in particular that kind of...
Yeah, so you know, they have a men's line, and a lady who knew my next door neighbors had came over to get in my class. Of course, they wanted us to come over, and I was like, I'm not going, like, cannot get me kicking and screaming. And you know, she went through the whole men's class. I'm like, all right, cool. So I just asked her a question, well, what do you make? Mm-hmm. And she showed me what she made for the month. And as a young, very young, you know, I was interested. And I figured I knew enough females that I could say, hey, you know, I wasn't giving a class. Mm-hmm. But I figured I knew enough females that I can have her do the class for me, and I can just bring them all to the same place and location.
Okay.
So I made a little bit of money.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Good stuff. You're the very first man I've heard that. So I know they're out there.
Oh, yeah.
The very first one that I've met that has actually sold.
So just let the record reflect. I didn't conduct the classes. I just got everybody there.
But you know what? Even if you did, it would. And I think that would be amazing. Actually, there are some very famous male makeup artists.
Yeah, nah, that ain't me.
Not Mr. Jenkins. Nah. I don't. That's not how I know.
Nah, that ain't me.
Okay, so what motivated you to seek a career in marketing?
Marketing. So I started off as a biology major.
Okay.
over East Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I got into my sophomore year, and going into my freshman year, I had to make a decision, decision, which was I going to be a regular student, or was I going to play football?
Okay.
And, you know, a lot of classes I couldn't take because I was going out for football, so they were, you know, mandatory weightlifting classes and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I got a lab during that time. And if I don't take this lab now, that means I got to wait the next year. Mm-hmm. So I'm a year behind. So then my goal was to go to optometry school. So around my sophomore year, I decided to take the education route.
Okay.
My sophomore year, I found out that I did not have to be a biology major in order to go to optometry school. I can just take my courses that's mm-hmm. needed and apply. So I switched my major. And I switched my major to communications, mm-hmm. journalism and PR.
Okay, nice.
Yep, yep. And so, you know, during that time frame as well, when I'm coming upon graduation, I did an internship at the ad agency of Greenville.
Oh, nice.
And I came up with a slogan concept, treatment for a TV commercial in about 10 minutes. And the graphic guy, he came up with a logo for a client that came in. And I think she charged the lady somewhere the sum of like $5,000 for what, you know, what I wasn't getting paid for. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, this is definitely me. So I knew then I got a hefty taste of it. at the same time, I was always in the music industry. I when I was in college, I got a job at radio.
Okay.
There, and then I migrated over and I started a promotions company.
Okay.
So, so I was a record rep for just about all of the major record labels. And, you know, just kind of seeing how the entertainment side merged with the product and marketing side. Mm-hmm. So, so coming aboard, fast forward some years later, I worked at radio, opted not to go. And I said, I am going to, and I wonder about this to this day.
What did I do?
And I said, I am going to further along is marketing advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So I had a promotions company.
Was that to your parents' dismay?
Definitely to my parents' dismay.
Okay.
Definitely to their dismay. Because I had took all the necessary courses. I went through college with an undergraduate and a grad degree and took managed to take the courses that I needed on the side to get into optometry school.
Wow.
And so when I decided not to go, they were peed.
Mm-hmm.
What I did, I focused on the marketing advertising, landed my first client while I was still at radio. And of course, I had my promotions company. And what I did, I merged everything that I had done from the music and entertainment side to the marketing and promotion side, what I learned at radio in terms of media buying, media planning, in terms of the creative side and the skills that I learned in college.
Mm-hmm.
I have a undergrad in journalism PR. My grad degree is in, I have a master's degree in technical writing, basically professional technical communications.
Okay.
So, you know, I was already writing radio scripts, production, I knew just the elements of it. So I merged everything that I possibly could into one company.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually landed my first client. First client was actually my biggest client to this day, which is City Trends.
Nice.
Clothing retail store.
You're talking about City Trends? Mm-hmm. Fashion for
less.
Okay.
So when you hear that, that was my creation.
Nice.
When you see, hear, think, or feel anything City Trends, it's came from my brainchild in my office.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, for the past 13 years. I've been my client for 13 years
okay,
now.
Okay, good stuff. Mm-hmm. That's amazing.
Yeah.
To have that kind of relationship still to this day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, loyalty is very valuable.
Yeah.
Okay, good stuff. All right. I'm going to be singing that for us today. What kind of support system did you have when you first started your business?
Man, my parents.
Okay.
My parents and my best friends.
Nice.
You know, I don't think nobody really understood what marketing advertising was and how I got paid. So that was the biggest question. Like, how do you get paid?
So you were the Tommy of the group?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
You know, they were literally saying, I just don't understand it. Like, so if somebody advertised, so how do you get paid again?
Mm-hmm.
And so, but I will tell you this, not knowing, they kind of stuck in there from day one. You know, I started a company, you know, it was a rough period, I tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
The music industry was declining because, you know, 9/11 had happened.
Mm-hmm.
All the shows were stopping. It wasn't funneling in. They were stopping a lot of stuff that they normally had. And I don't know what it was at this particular month in time. I said, man, I am broke. So I had to go to my dad. I said, I need $100 to open up this bank account. I give it back to you next week. And he was like, you doing what? What do you need? He gave me the $100. Went to open up a bank account, and I wrote the contract for my client. Of course, I have technical writing background, so I wrote the contract myself. And I opened up the bank account. First deposit went in, gave my dad back his $100. And we've been off to the running ever since.
Nice. Mm-hmm. I love it.
They, you know, I started off in my parents' house.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the first months of the Roger company were in the back room with the fax machine going, the phone line going, everything going out of their house. So, you know, they were support system from day one.
Well, hey, humble beginnings. I mean, it could come big big endings, rather. So
yeah.
I love it. You are currently, like I said before, the owner and president of Rajan Company, which offers an array of marketing needs from professional marketing consulting, product and identity branding, media planning and buying, multimedia, creative development, design, radio, television, print, website, corporate identity solutions. Which one would you consider your strongest service? Like, hands down, I could do it with my eyes closed, hands behind my back.
Strongest services is two. It's consulting and media buying.
Why?
The consulting has become the most valuable asset for the Rodgen Company. You know, a lot of companies, you know, they say, well, I know I need marketing advertising. They really don't know what aspect of it that they need. So going in and analyzing what their company is doing, what needs they are, what needs they currently have and how to assess those has been a strong point. You know, I've had clients who really didn't need advertising. Mm-hmm. They just needed someone to consult them how their business and their structure is ran inside.
Nice.
So, you know, it's become the lifeline for us because, you know, it's helped us to gain truth to other forms of marketing.
Okay.
You know, the reason why our clients like us is because we're very truthful. We tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They have a sense of loyalty to us. We have a sense of loyalty with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, going in, if I'm assessing and saying, hey, you really don't need to be on radio. You really don't need to be on TV. You really don't need to be on digital. What you need is a plan inside, you know, a internal marketing plan to help with your employee culture, to help with your cohesion within the office,
nice.
To help turn over your product faster. Mm-hmm. You know, these are elements that we start with first, because no matter how many people I send through your door with marketing advertising, if you're not prepared inside,
mm-hmm.
then you'll never see any results.
Mm-hmm.
So the consultant has become the hands down one of the biggest aspects for us. And then we are niche, even though we do general market, target marketing, we are niche in the African-American consumer.
Okay.
So having that niche, a lot of our clients, you know, they know that the African-American consumer and the minority, the multicultural consumer, that they spend, but they don't know why, the rhyme and the reason.
Mm-hmm.
So we come in as experts and put a rhyme and a reason behind it.
Okay.
The media buying side is because I don't think, you know, being that the digital age has broadened us with social media. You know, a lot of people say, well, I can do social media. I have a personal Facebook. I can do that. But, you know, there's always a rhyme and a reason behind it.
Right.
So media buying is still one of those things that you have to know a rhyme and a reason why.
Okay.
It's not something you can just throw money at in hopes that it works. You have to have a formula. You have to know what formula that is in order for it to be effective and how to measure it.
Okay.
Not you'd be throwing money out of the door every
right.
time. So, you know, and that includes, you know, that media buying side, that includes even if you're buying for social media, digital, radio, television, or print. Yeah.
Okay. Now I have a follow up question to that, because
mm-hmm.
have you ever came up against a company who was like, oh, we kind of want marketing, we kind of need you, but, you know, we've been doing XYZ so far. And
oh, yeah.
And you kind of come in and they're like blown away. Like,
yep. I've actually come across that several times.
Okay.
You know, we have a huge success story that I like to brag about every now and then.
Go ahead.
You know, even starting with City Trends, they started with a City Trends started with a nominal amount of money. I don't want to say what it started with.
I got you.
But it was nominal. And they started about 112 stores when I started with them. They bought it from an existing company.
Okay.
And in 6 months working with us, they went from a very nominal fee in terms of growth to
mm-hmm.
about $65 million. And that's been the biggest growth that any retailer has ever had overnight.
Wow.
A year after working with us, they were at $125 million. Then they went public. Fast forward to this day,
mm-hmm.
if you of course, a public company, you look at the stock earnings, they are a $681 million a year company.
Nice.
And we're still agency record. And starting off with 112 stores, now they have roughly about, I think, 568 stores nationwide.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, go ahead. I ain't mad.
The second one was a client that I had. He was the owner of the Ace Cash Expresses.
Okay.
And
I remember those.
Mm-hmm. And it was a similar story. He had a system. He was in the radio heavy. A couple of years prior to me coming along working with him, he said, man, you know, how he came to me, he said, everywhere I have a store, there's a City Trends store.
Mm-hmm.
So he was like, we have to have the same customer.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried everything. Radio doesn't work. This doesn't work. This doesn't work. And, you know, I came in and gave him an assessment of what he looked at inside. He gave me some data. I formed a plan around it. And I just said, hey, let's make a deal. You know, if you give, and this was the deal, you give me $1,000 a month. If this doesn't work within 3 months, no harm intended. You go by your way, I go by. He said, no problem. I've spent tens of thousands of dollars on radio, and it hasn't worked.
Radio is expensive.
He called me back month two. He says, man, I don't know what you're doing, what you've done. We have increased the past sales by now. So about month, so he wanted to increase his budget. So month four of coming and working with us, he had already tripled what he had made the previous year. And
in month four.
In month four. And was blown absolutely away. You know, I can't get into the part of it, but he turned around and he cashed out. He sued Ace Cash Express. He cashed out because he had the, he was the one of the most wanted men in the company, as well as the industry, because he had the biggest growth. And they could not figure out how big and what his strategy was. So I would like to take partial credit for it. There's some stuff that he did, don't get me wrong. But it was a lot that we did to aid in that as well.
Amazing. Okay. So just kind of switching over to your SWOTs, which is, of course, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. What are some marketing challenges you have faced since starting your agency?
Man, some of the challenges that I would say the biggest challenge that we have faced since starting the agency has really been business development, competing with the larger companies and corporations. You know, we have a finite niche, so to say. You know, we don't claim to be the biggest ad agency, but we claim to be one of the most efficient advertising agencies. So when you start getting into some of your bigger clients, they want to know that you have a staff of 100, you know, that you had, that you're working on their project night and day. And really, in a lot of cases, it doesn't take that many people. It may only take two, maybe three. And by doing that, you know, what I did was I cut down as an entrepreneur to be more efficient and get efficiency out of my employees and what we provide to the client, which is a personalized touch. And we always make sure that we pay close personal attention instead of you just being a client on our roster. We want to make sure that we know your business. And so at any point in time you ask me a question, even as the owner, I know how to answer that question. So that finite niche and that personal attention, I think, is what's gotten us this far. And a sense of loyalty with our clients. You know, they actually pay attention to what we say. You know, they listen, and you know, one of the biggest things is they trust us. So that's an aspect that I never wanted to lose. But on the flip side of it, that's become kind of our weakness. It, you know, it's because when you start to compete against these larger agencies, they are, you know, they are a roster of 40, 50 clients, they are a staff of 200 plus, they have a New York address, they have an LA address, they have an overseas address. You know, that kind of prohibits us in a lot of facets in how they perceive our company. You know, when I started the company, I said I wanted to base it right here in Fayetteville instead of moving, and I haven't left yet. Even though sometimes I question that. I really question that. Because majority of our client base is out of state, actually.
Okay. Where is it, just kind of spread throughout, or is it a particular?
Throughout nationally, predominantly throughout the Southeast is our biggest strong point.
So if you did consider more so making that move, where would you move? Please don't say Atlanta.
No, it wouldn't be Atlanta.
Okay.
Like, everybody has moved to...
It's oversaturated. Just leave it alone.
Yeah. It's
Charlotte and Atlanta, just let it go.
Yeah, it's definitely oversaturated. I would do Dallas or Houston.
Nice, okay.
I would do San Diego. I didn't want to be in L.A., but I want to be in close proximity to L.A. The reason I wanted Dallas and Houston is just kind of centrally located, and those are major hubs.
Yes, that's true.
For the pure multicultural side, I wanted to be based out of Miami.
Okay.
Strategically.
Yeah.
And then a little further up this way, you know, it has been, and this is where we're kind of moving to now, is being Raleigh, migrating another office to Raleigh. And previously, I didn't want to go to D.C. because it was still saturated as well, but I did want a close relationship, and actually had considered Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay.
And the reason being because Columbia was closer to Atlanta. It mm-hmm. was closer to North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of that central hub of mm-hmm. the Southeast. And it didn't have a whole lot of competition. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So a follow-up question to that. Have you worked closely with, because it is a military town, have you worked closely with the military in prior
engagements? No. You know, that's the funny part. We are only now getting into the government contracting space.
Wow, okay.
We have tried...
Was that strategic, or is this kind of just how it organically happened?
To be honest with you, it kind of is both. It's actually a little bit of both.
Okay.
Initially, I was never really interested in the military sector.
Okay.
And people said, are you crazy? Why not?
be in Fayetteville?
And I tell you, it's because we had a niche, and mm-hmm. that niche worked.
Okay.
You know, our clients loved us. We were on the road, so we're getting a bigger impact from it. And you know, those are the things that, you know, are more so recognized. Like doing certain aspects of the military didn't necessarily translate over into the commercial world. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I felt like I either had to choose or either separate the time of it. Mm-hmm. You know, what the military deemed as, you know, if you do these things and you're on. You know, our list of these things, that's not like those wouldn't help me get another commercial client.
Right.
And what I'm learning is, you know, it's the same. No matter what commercial clients you have, mm-hmm. if you're not on that military roster from day one and have that experience, that's what matters.
Yeah.
So, you know, strategically over the years, just kind of where I wanted to take the company. You know, we just now started evolving over to the military sector.
Okay.
It wasn't because of close proximity to Fort Bragg. It was more so when I looked at the workload that we had been doing for years for all of our clients and saying, hey, you know, the work is just a little bit easier on the government side, and I know that check is guaranteed.
Yeah. Well, 60 to 90 days later, but yes. Later.
Yeah. So, you know, just moving in a different direction and seeing how the clients on the commercial side were really evolving, and what the industry started to look like for executives at ad agencies.
Okay.
I started seeing a lot of executives over advertising agencies. They were leaving the agencies. They were grabbing a product. They were becoming owners of the product or part owners of the product, and they were sticking what they do best: marketing, advertising. Then they were either going public or they were forming a corporation with someone as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of them, you know, they got out, they started doing podcasts, talk shows. They started consulting more than they did in the actual day-to-day.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I looked at it, you know, one of the reasons was because, you know, a lot of the advertising agency changed. A lot of the clients began to say, hey, we're going to take an approach. Instead of being multicultural, instead of being niched, instead of doing a lot of business to business in a certain sector, we're just going to go with a total market approach, meaning we want to just kind of grab everyone.
Yeah.
But that total market approach is I would say this, is single-handedly taking out a lot of your multicultural agencies, a lot of your targeted and niche marketing as well. And for the life of it, I would definitely say this, it is, and you know, there's studies that go back and forth between each, but you know, it has almost single-handedly taken down the advertising agency, because now, you know, companies are saying, well, you know, we'll just hire someone in-house, and that in-house person, they can run our social media, and that's marketing.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can buy a billboard in Times Square, and I've reached a multicultural. And when in fact, that's exact opposite of what the case really is.
Yeah.
You know, you're targeting a large group of people, but you're not targeting those who actually patronize you.
Okay.
So, you know, in the sense of the company's trying to cut back and trying to save money, in essence, what it's doing is ruining their brand for future use.
Right.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you this question. It's not necessarily on the list, but it kind of aligns with what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Shea Moisture, I don't know if you've mm-hmm. heard
Very
the whole controversy that happened, and they wanted to basically highlight a multicultural mm-hmm. when they had such a African-American following or a biracial following.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was so much backlash. I actually know a lot of people that I don't personally use Shea Moisture because they're expensive, but they ain't on my side of the tracks. But anyway, but they actually had a huge drawdown
mm-hmm.
from that. And so how do you approach that, where you do want to, because their argument was, well, we've always been a multicultural. It's never just been African-American biracial. It's always been, you know, why our products work for all. What are your thoughts on that? Should they have really been strategic and just stayed in that community, or was it something they could have transitioned to over time instead of putting out such a big campaign?
Yep. So, you know, it's definitely a transition issue.
Okay.
You know, you cannot stun or, let me tell you this, you cannot throw a plugged up television or radio into a pool of water and think that you're not going to get shocked.
Yeah.
You know, gradually, you know, over time, you have to release that image. You have to release that campaign. And I'm going to tell you two stories of this. So, you know, just on a marketing advertising standpoint, Shea Moisture would have been better doing a transitional phase where they have a niche market that is their home market. Mm-hmm. And then either, I'm not saying that they had to necessarily change their packaging to fit another demographic or another name to fit their demographic, but they should have had two sets of advertising campaigns. Mm-hmm. One that stayed with their core customer and one that reached over to their transitional customer as well. You know, that is the biggest backlash. And I think because, you know, and this is the thing too, you know, it's the day and time. Now, I would tell you this, if it was probably 10 years ago, you probably would never be having this discussion. Mm-hmm. But now that people are becoming more conscious about natural products and they're becoming more conscious about how they spend and what they spend on, it definitely became an issue because, you know, to the African American consumer, it said, hey, you know, we got you here, but now you don't want to deal with us anymore.
Yeah.
And to the more of the ethnic, multicultural consumer on the other side, it became, hey, you know, thank you, we'll try the product. So you jumped into a phase that probably had no true basis versus saying, hey, let's test, let's transition slowly but surely so we include everyone as well. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you start off with, like, I tell you, so you start off with a little bit of urban. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're on, let's take radio for example, you're on urban radio. Mm-hmm. And then you start to transition a little bit. You may run an ad or two on your Q98, your top 40 station. Mm-hmm. And then you say, well, that worked a little bit, let me try a little more. And then a little more. And then you start transitioning over to say, well, I'm running on the urban station, I'm running on the top 40 station, now let me try country. Mm-hmm. So it's a gradual phase over the time span. Now, what that did though, that opened up a lot of opportunity for other people like myself. Mm-hmm. So we would have our own line of Shea products coming out.
Nice.
Because that niche opened up the door for us. And of course, what I felt in my heart was that, okay, Shea Moisture needs me, but if Shea Moisture doesn't use me, Shea Moisture is going to become a competitor.
Yeah.
Like, because I feel like I can definitely outmark, like, that showed me that I can outmarket them.
Yeah. Okay, good. Well, just as a consumer, I didn't realize how big it was going to become. Mm-hmm. I think my concern was price point. Because on one aisle, let's say that you're paying almost $15, but on the opposite aisle, you're paying no more than $7. That's where, as a consumer, I have an issue.
Right.
Why, as, you know, ethnic, on the ethnic aisle, it will be a lot more when in your packaging, quote unquote, it says it's the same.
So I can answer that question for you.
Okay.
And it's purely because as African American consumers, we are consumers and not producers.
Right.
So we will buy and purchase more than any other race and culture. Mm-hmm. So if you look at things that we spend the most money on, you know, it's breaking down the categories. It's alcohol. It's beverages. It's health and beauty products. It's prescription drugs. Mm-hmm. It's clothing and entertainment. So these are all things that even if we as a group really don't have a lot of money to do, we will find a way to buy these products.
This is true.
So a lot of your companies have taken advantage of the African American consumer because of that fact. They know no matter what it is, we're going to go out and we're going to buy it. And then if we won't buy it at that price point, they can knock it off and they can sell it to us in a cheaper form. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they do. If you look at other ethnicities, nobody markets them in that aspect.
Yeah.
You know, you may have a luxury brand, but they don't have something that they market towards just like the African American. So they just take for granted that we as consumers is always going to be there.
Wow.
I go back to my point about consulting is one of the mm-hmm. biggest things in media buying.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, consulting, I would tell you, you know, this is a bad idea.
Mm-hmm.
And before we do the media buying and the messaging, this needs to be out appropriately. And in terms of the media buying, instead of me putting out a campaign, let's test here, let's test there, let's mm-hmm. test there, and then let's gradually go over.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I do want to ask you a question about social media and digital media. What is the biggest challenge? What is the biggest challenge for a small business trying to enter that market, even if they do use a marketing agency? What is their biggest challenge?
Understanding why you use social media and digital media.
Okay.
You know, everybody feels like, oh, I have to be on Facebook. I have mm-hmm. to be on social media. And my question is, to a lot of them, is why? Why do you feel like? Some have valid reasons.
Yeah.
Some say, I need a presence. I need this to replace the Yellow Pages for me. I need
right.
to be found online. You know, which are all legitimate reasons. And then some just say, I really don't know. Either my product doesn't call for me to be on social media in that terms, or, you know, things that I've been doing over the years have been working, but I just feel like I need to be on social media. I really don't know why, but my son told me I need to be on it, so mm-hmm. I need to be on it. So, you know, they have to figure out a rhyme and a reason that applies to their business of why social media is applicable to them as a business owner.
Okay. So we're in our study, in our course of study, we're reading a book. I don't know if you heard of it. It's called Likeable Social Media.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the driving forces in the book, he talks about having a presence, because that's typically where people are using Facebook as a search engine,
right,
to looking up companies and seeing reviews and different things of that nature.
Social media is single-handedly the new Yellow Pages.
Yeah.
Yellow Pages is gone. It's social media.
I see recommendations all the time. I'm like, when did they do that?
And I tell people, just like Google has become the right next to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know something, you Google.
I'm bad for it. I'm a Googler. I am. It is Bible. Okay, so you said that you have to find the reason why you need it, but in the instance that you do need it, you need to use it.
Yeah.
So how important is it for you to have your own website?
Oh.
Because a lot of people are just almost... A majority I've seen, when you look up companies, the first thing that you do see
is their social media site
mm-hmm. instead of their actual website.
So, you know, I tell all of my clients this, you should always have a Facebook page,
okay.
and a website.
Okay.
You know, and I tell you this, the reason why right now Facebook is the 100-pound gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Instagram, Twitter, that's cool, but on social media right now, the 100-pound gorilla is Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
You need a website for information.
Okay.
People need to reference where you are, and it helps with your search. This is what a lot of people don't understand. You can bring up a Facebook page, but there's a million Facebook pages.
Yes.
How you become ranked, if you type in Google in terms of SEO
mm-hmm.
and you want to find a lawyer,
mm-hmm.
it becomes ranking. If you don't have a website, you can't be ranked.
Wow.
So in order to be found, that's what you want to do. You know, you can be found, your Facebook can be found.
Okay.
But let's talk realistic facts here.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm a consumer and I want to buy anything that you are putting out to me. If you have a Facebook page, I feel like we're on the same level.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a website that has all of the information or has pictures or whatever your product is, I'm a little bit more applicable to say we're on two different levels.
Yeah.
That you are a marksman in your craft and I should be buying from you.
Mm-hmm.
Versus on Facebook, I'm like, all you have is a Facebook page? That's all I can see is Facebook? Mm-hmm. I can do a Facebook page.
Can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Good stuff. What are your untapped opportunities, meaning services that you have given less time at Rygen? Have you been able to capitalize on them, even though that's not necessarily your main focus?
I would tell you, we had to reorganize a little bit. You know,
okay.
Of course, when digital social media becomes a huge platform, you have to take advantage of it.
Mm-hmm.
So of course, you know, we brought on a whole entire digital unit, social media unit as well, just to, you know, you have to be in that ball game.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to be good at it as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I would say our biggest miss opportunity though has been our business development.
Okay.
You know, and I do say that because some of the things that we have that we talked about earlier, given that personalized touch in the realm of social media as well, we've kind of missed out on what a lot of our larger companies and clients have and been able to compete with them.
Okay.
So, you know, we always have to find a creative way to stay niched in our niche, but also gain clientele as well. You know,
okay.
You know, you can grow by leaps and bounds, but at the same time, there's always a repercussion if you grow too fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I do feel like that we've grown. Should we have grown in this point in time to a larger company base? Yes, if we were looking for a general client. But being that we're niched, you know, mm-hmm. there are certain things and ways that you can grow. So that's been kind of our slow point, is that aspect of business development.
Okay. So I know you have a lot of entertainment background.
Mm-hmm.
What industry would you say is probably like, man, I'm so glad I got this opportunity. This is my vibe. This is where I flourish the most.
Entertainment.
Is that the culture within your business as well?
Yeah. Okay. Definitely. When I first started the agency, I merged one of the first campaigns I did. Of course, it was a it actually had a celebrity endorsement.
Nice.
Attached to it.
Okay.
So you know that's the moniker because I tell you this, because the culture calls for it a lot of times. Then a lot of times you can ease back on the endorsements, but you know, our culture being in that multicultural community and what the culture calls for, that is a major component. The entertainment industry drives products, brands. It drives how you market somebody. It drives how you message them as well. You know, I give you a distinct brand of it is Patron.
Okay.
You know, no one really knew of, was even messing with a tequila at that. And, you know, a couple rappers, Usher, they put it in a song. Now tequila is the drink of choice.
Yes.
Yeah. And the bad, and I tell you, the other part is they traditionally didn't even market to African Americans.
Correct.
Or even the multicultural consumer.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we adapted that culture for them. So a lot of these brands and products are because the entertainment industry has dictated those things for us.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So I would like to, I want to ask this question. Has your company exceeded, okay, because we all start with a dream. Has it exceeded your expectations? Or do you still have big dreams for the company?
Oh no, we still got big dreams.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, like we've had success stories.
Mm-hmm.
We've had, you know, platforms that put us in certain positions in life, and I'm grateful. I'm blessed for that.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I just like anybody else, I would tell you, you know, there's still a long way to go within mm-hmm. this industry.
Okay.
You know, the goal is not really to be the biggest agency; is to be the most efficient agency.
Right.
And it's to spawn off consultants. It's to spawn off other business ventures, spawn off other business owners,
mm-hmm.
and to put us in a light to where we are the go-to experts in just about every aspect of the multicultural concepts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether it's consulting, whether it's the expert in media buying, media planning. Like, we know how to reach our audience. And a lot of people and a lot of agencies, still to this day, you can have all the computer software that you want to, you can have all the data that you want to, and some of them still cannot reach that consumer. And it's because and it's because we know two things. We do use the data, and in fact, we do. We do use the data in effect to make uniform decisions, but we also use our knowledge of the culture and data driven from the culture to make and assess our decisions.
Okay. Good stuff. How do you handle your competition and marketing campaigns and service offerings? Because you, like you stated, you know, you are competing with some of the bigger names.
Mm-hmm.
How do you kind of manage that? Is there an instance where you kind of join forces with some of the other agencies? Has that been able to happen in the past?
I really wouldn't call it that. You know, we have an extensive network. So, okay. You know, so there are strategic partners that we have taken on for projects. You know, they've been very helpful to us, but that did not, did, but they haven't been a competitor of us. They've just been strategic partners.
Right.
You know, can we deliver anything that any other ad agency could deliver and more? Yes. And, you know, a lot of it, like I said before, a lot of it is not dictated on size. If need be, we can ramp up to accommodate for it, mm-hmm. or we can ramp down to accommodate for it as well. Mm-hmm. You know, the of course, you're going into entrepreneurship. The biggest thing that you have to learn is how to cut down on your overhead.
Right.
And expenses.
Yes.
You know, you can't have expenses that outweigh what you're bringing in. Mm-hmm. You know, that's just not how business is ran. So, you know, you have to, you know, in order to be able to run somebody else's business, you have to run your business right. more efficiently as well.
Yeah.
So, and I think a lot of it too is catching up with the times. Like, we have a lot of employees that work remotely, you know, so, you know, if McDonald's walks in and wants to see 100 employees, you may not see that, but just know that we do have a staff all mm-hmm. over, and, you know, people don't this day and age, you don't physically have to show up at an office in order to get a job done.
Right. Yeah. Okay. I've actually spoken with another ad agency before, and they had just transitioned from a three-story building to working remote. She said mm-hmm. they actually are more efficient
exactly.
in their own homes than they were at the office. Yeah. So I thought that was very interesting to hear, because to me, in my mind, it would be opposite.
Well, let me tell you, because the reason is a lot of people, when they come into work, you know, I say about 50% of that is actually work. The other 50 is socializing, mm-hmm. catching up, searching the internet, mm-hmm. you know, you're doing other things. Versus if you're at home and you have a glorified deadline, and I don't care what else you do off my time, mm-hmm. you know, you can go do whatever else you want to do, just follow and meet these deadlines. And mm-hmm. that's all they care about. So their mindset becomes to say, all I had to do was finish the deadline, and I can go about my day.
Mm-hmm.
So people appreciate that more, especially in today's day and age, because now they're able to stay home with their kids. They're able to spend more family time. Mm-hmm. They're able to work remotely from their favorite restaurant or bar.
Yeah, I love it. Okay, last question, because you have been so amazing, and I don't want to take up too much of your time. What is a positive affirmation that you live by?
Man, do unto others as you want done to yourself.
Why?
Because, you know, this is just like I'm not saying all business. Most businesses is actually cutthroat.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you treat a client or just a customer in general, if you treat a person bad, you know, you can expect that karma to come back with you.
Mm-hmm.
When you treat people good, when you smile and they know that you're genuine, that business comes back around to you, and that person comes back around to you. You know, the thing that hurts, The thing is, the biggest form of advertising and the worst form of advertising for anybody is word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you have a bad reputation and people spread that reputation, no matter what you do, no matter how many times you advertise, people are not going to come in your door.
Yeah.
But by word of mouth, if people say, hey, that's a great company, that's a great guy, he did all he could for me, he or she did all they could for me, and we had a great relationship, they're going to use that and refer that to others, and people always remember that.
True. Well, Mr. TJ Jenkins, you have been so amazing. I really do appreciate it. Hope you guys enjoyed this interview. Thank you so much.